Morning, everyone. 8:06 on your Wednesday morning. It's July 21st. I'm Sean Higgins, the KPCW studios in Park City, sitting in for Leslie Thatcher this week. I'm looking at 64 degrees currently at our studio in Old Town Park City, 64 down in Heber as well. Both on the line with a full local weather forecast, we have meteorologist Cesar Cornejo with the ABC Forecast Center in Salt Lake City. Good morning, Cesar.
Good morning. We continue to see very mild temperatures as we step outside the door. For this afternoon, we can expect to see temperatures ranging today around the 80s for us. So it's going to be a great start to our day for us so far. We do expect to see the possibility of some showers. So that is something to keep in mind as we go throughout the day. A high of 86. And we'll see tonight that once the showers start to die down, we are left with partly cloudy skies and a low of 63. Thursday, just like clockwork, we expect to start off mostly sunny and then see that chance of thunderstorms once again, a high of 86. So we're kind of on a repeat style of just temperatures for us. And Thursday night, as those storms start to wane off, we continue to see mostly cloudy skies and a low of 63. Friday, again, we see the possibility of some afternoon storm chances after a mostly sunny start to our day. We continue to see that again by the evening time, once we lose our daytime heating, we then start to cool off, low of 61 with partly cloudy skies. Going into the holiday, Pioneer Day, we're expecting to see on Saturday that we have a high of 87, mostly sunny skies to start off the morning and early afternoon before we start to see a very late chance of some shower activity, mostly around some of the higher elevation areas and mountaintops. And then by Saturday, we continue with a partly cloudy sky, low around 61. We'll see Sunday. Once again, sunny to start off the day. Then some very isolated thunderstorms are possible for us here, and we can expect to see a high of 87. So overall, not a terrible day, just to be weather aware if we're going outdoors. We'll see partly cloudy skies for Sunday night with a low of 61. On Monday, we're expecting to see, once again, the chance of some thunderstorms for the afternoon hours after mostly sunny skies towards the beginning of the day for us, a high of 85 also. Monday night, we're expecting to see mostly cloudy skies after those storms die out, and we'll have a low of 59. And for Tuesday, we again, monsoonal moisture returns, see the shower activity hang around partly sunny skies with a high of 82. From the Pinpoint Weather Center, I'm meteorologist Cesar Cornejo. Over to you.
Cesar, thank you. Coming up in this hour of programming, director of Utah's Rockport Echo and Rail Trail State Parks, Eric Bradshaw, will be on to talk about the recently announced funding for upgrades to about a dozen state parks in Utah. Executive director of the Alf Engen Ski Museum, Connie Nelson, will be on to talk about the 2020 Intermountain Ski Hall of Fame with 2020 inductee Larry Warren. And Park City Historic Alliance Executive Director Ginger Wicks has an update from yesterday's board meeting. All that starting at 8:15. And after NPR News at 9 o'clock, be sure to tune in to The Mountain Life. Today's guests include Dr. Jennifer Haley. She's a dermatologist who focuses on a whole-body approach to dermatology. Then Kathy Batten, the mother of Haley Batten, a 23-year-old Park City mountain biker who just landed in Tokyo for her first Olympic Games. She'll join to talk about parenting a high-achieving child and how to watch this hometown hero when she races in the Summer Olympics on July 27th. Taking a look at some local headlines now, vaccination rates in Wasatch County have slowed since May. As the back-to-school season approaches, officials hope those numbers will rise once again. KBCW's Ben Lassiter has more on this and other COVID-19-related information from the County Public Health Department.
In Wasatch County, just under 15,000 people are considered fully vaccinated, and nearly 1,500 have received one dose out of the necessary two. That means about 45% of the Wasatch County population has had at least one immunization shot, according to data from the County Health Department this week. As of Tuesday, there were 74 known active cases in the county. Spokesperson Chris Smoot of the County Health Department says he's grateful for the progress made so far, but he hopes more progress will be made before school starts.
So I think overall it's gone pretty well, but it has slowed down for sure. So I guess our encouragement is for those who haven't gotten it yet to think about it, you know, ask their medical provider, or they can ask us questions, and we do encourage them to get it. The more people that are vaccinated, the less impact that the virus will have come fall when people are back together and perhaps in school or other functions similar to what happened last fall.
Fall 2020 brought the most severe infection and death rate related to COVID-19. Out of 22 deaths caused by COVID-19 in the county, most occurred in November and December. According to Smoot, transmission among students was particularly high during that time.
Particularly in our high school and middle schools and high school, that's where we saw the most spread happening last year. We're with those age groups, so we would encourage those kids to get it because we do think or believe that that will help limit the spread in school, especially since we don't have the same measures in place in schools as we did last year.
He says the best way to keep it low this fall semester is for students 12 and older to get vaccinated. As of this week, the vaccination rate among people 12 through 18 in Wasatch County is 33%. Among patients tested for variants of the virus, Smoot says there have been 33 identified cases of the extra transmissible Delta variant. He believes the real number is much higher, though. Most patients are not tested specifically for variants. He says statewide, as many as 90% of COVID-19 cases tested recently have been the Delta variant. The good news? There have been zero deaths from the virus in Wasatch County since March, and vaccination rates among the most at-risk populations are high. Smoot says virtually 100% of people 80 and older in Wasatch County are vaccinated, and 86% among those aged 70 through 79. For ages 60 through 69, the rate is 79%. In Wasatch County, vaccines are free and available at pharmacies, doctor's offices, and the Wasatch County Health Department building. Ben Lasseter, KPCW News.
Well, a report that a Park City resident vandalized two political lawn signs in the Park Meadows area has been referred to the Summit County Attorney's Office for review. Rick Bruff has more.
Sheriff's Lieutenant Andrew Wright said that two signs were damaged, one for Mayor Andy Bierman, the other for Councilmember Tim Henney. Both are running for another term in this year's municipal elections. Lieutenant Wright said the Summit County Sheriff's Office was asked to take the case to avoid any conflict of interest with Park City Police. A report came in Friday night the 16th from a 39-year-old resident who said that as he drove down Meadows Drive past the intersection with American Saddler, he saw a man kicking, breaking, and throwing around the two campaign signs. The suspect then rode away on an e-bike. The complainant said he caught up to the suspect and took photos of the man. When confronted about his actions, the suspect apologized and said he would go back and fix the signs, but never did. A deputy tracked down the suspect, a 62-year-old resident of Aspen Springs, who said he was riding his bike through the area, but he denied that he destroyed the signs. Lieutenant Wright did not identify the suspect, but he said to his knowledge the man is not a candidate in Park City's elections. On a related note, Park City Council member Matt Doyle told KPCW that emotions are stirring in town with the election season, and added to that the soils repository controversy. But he asked citizens to keep it real.
I just like to see us get back to the small town that we are. We all know each other. We all have coffee together. We all go to the same concerts. Let's keep it civil. It's an election season. We want to elect the people we want. But come on, it's Park City. Let's keep it real here.
Park City Council member Matt Stoyelny. For KPCW, I'm Rick Bruff.
Well, good morning, everyone. 8:15 on your Wednesday morning. It's July 21st. Sean Higgins here at the KPCW studios, sitting in for Leslie Thatcher this week. Well, with a 33% increase in state park visitation compared to the previous year, that's over 2.66 million people, the 2020 recreation season was truly one for the record books. In the 2021 legislative session, Utah State Parks was appropriated nearly $120 million to go towards state parks, including $67 million for facilities and infrastructure improvements. Two local state parks, Rockport and Deer Creek, were included in that funding. Eric Bradshaw manages Rockport Echo and Rail Trail State Parks. He joins us in the studio to talk about how some of that money is going to be used. Good morning, Eric, and thank you for joining us.
Yeah, good morning.
Absolutely. So some of the amenities upgrades, I understand, are about to begin or may have already begun for Echo State Park, which is actually from funding that was previously appointed or appropriated by the legislature. Is that correct?
Yeah, correct.
And some, what are some of those projects that are happening at Echo right now?
Well, so a year ago, we did the campground. So we revamped the campground. So that opened up last June. But this year, starting here early August, we will be revamping the whole day use center. So there will be our day use area. There will be a new entrance. So we're going to change it from this, rather than a hairpin turn, it's going to be a nice 45-degree angle turn in, new visitor center, paid parking, and then we're going to extend the boat ramp as well.
Mm-hmm. And how much money is being spent on those improvements at Echo?
Echo's just shy of about $7 million.
Mm-hmm. And on a yearly basis, how much visitation does Echo Reservoir get?
We're still getting the numbers like our first year, you know, mm-hmm. was there. We're still working on getting some of those numbers.
Mm-hmm. And are there any kind of private concessions there, or is that a common practice to private businesses operating at state park facilities? Is that allowed at all?
Oh, yeah, that's pretty common. We'll contract or do a contract with a private concessionaire to provide like food service and boat rentals and things of that nature. Echo didn't do one because we wanted to get construction finished, and then that the one building that is going to stay will become the concession building.
Mm-hmm. So let's shift to the recent announcement about the funding that was announced last week. The funding is allocated to upgrade and improve amenities at about a dozen state parks around the state. Rockport is one of those state parks and has plans to update day use amenities, parking, and expansion of beach access. What else is involved over at Rockport?
So at Rockport, what we're doing is we have a Cedar Point, which it used to be like a walk-in campsite, which only had 8 sites, so not a lot of use. We changed that to a day use area, and it became very popular because that's the sandy beach area. It's really sought after. And so what we're doing is we're gonna add additional parking, bathrooms, and hopefully some sunshades as well. So that'll take us up to around 30 more parking spots, where right now we have about 75.
Mm-hmm. And how much of that $64 million allocated to all the parks statewide will be used at Rockport?
Just short of a million.
Just short of a million. And what is the timing for the work to begin at Rockport?
We don't have a contractor in place. We're still going through preliminary plans. We are moving fairly fast on those. They really, really want to start breaking ground in the fall.
Mm-hmm. And I know Rockport is one of those reservoirs. It's a little more out of the way than some of the other reservoirs in the county. I'm thinking Deer Creek is actually Wasatch County, but in the Wasatch Back area. How much visitation does an area like Rockport get?
We get a lot, just as much as, like last year we were full every weekend. Saturday and Sunday we were filling up. I still want to look at those numbers from last year just because that was a really good year for us. But it does kind of depend on water levels as well.
Mm-hmm. And I want to ask you briefly about the rail trail. The rail trail is very extensive, runs from Park City all the way to Colville, I believe. And State Parks is responsible for the entire length of that trail. Is that correct?
Yeah, it runs all the way to Echo.
All the way to Echo. Gotcha. Mm-hmm. And I know recently city government here in Park City has begun exploring the option of possibly taking over the portion of the rail trail inside Park City limits and taking that under city control. Have you been part of any of those discussions at all?
Yeah, I've spoke with Park City. This has been going on the talk's been there for over a year. So we're going through that process of exploring other ways to maintain that trail and keep it up.
Mm-hmm. And how much of a budget is allocated to the rail trail each year by State Parks?
Well, we have a contractor in place, and we pay them $84,000 a year to maintain the trail, maintain the bathrooms. That involves snow grooming, snow removal as well from the parking lots. So it's really like year-round. But like this time of year, he's usually spraying for weeds and scraping, keeping all those goat heads off the trail, especially the Echo portion.
Mm-hmm. And with the legislature acknowledging the intense visitation in our state parks, particularly last year, but also, I mean, Utah is a recreation state, visitation is high. Every year, will there be additional funding to help properly maintain the rail trail going forward?
Well, the rail trail is kind of like an anomaly. It's one of the state parks that doesn't. We don't charge. It's free to use. I do work on trying to get grants and things like that to do upkeep. But most of the rail trail's funding comes from we have contracts in place or easements. So the easements pay for the rail trail.
Mm-hmm. And what are some of the main concerns expressed by Park City, and why would they want to take over management of that portion of the rail trail?
Well, they'd really like to expand, like make the pavement. They'd like to redo the pavement, make it wider, add bike lanes and things like that, which all sound great. I'm all for. It's just time and budget.
Mm-hmm. And just kind of legally speaking, what does it take for to take over management of a section of a state park? Is that a little more complicated? Is it as simple as you guys signing a piece of paper just saying Park City now controls this? Is there kind of a lease agreement that needs to be come to? How does that process flesh out?
Yeah, so we're going to come to an agreement. It'll still be state. It'll still be a state park. They'll just be the ones that maintain that section.
Mm-hmm. And as a park director, how do you request funds from the state? Is there a maintenance schedule, some kind of a master plan, or a committee that you have to lobby that then lobbies the legislature?
Yeah, so once a year we'll get with our director and deputy directors, and we'll tell them what our needs are and what projects we'd like to complete, and then they'll take those into consideration when they go to in front of the legislature.
Mm-hmm. And speaking about your colleagues in the State Parks Department, what are some of the major concerns that have been voiced over the last year? I mean, higher visitation, is staffing all good? Are you guys short-staffed at all? Are you looking to hire more rangers?
We're always hiring new rangers, yeah. I think they actually added two more positions. They added a new ranger at Sand Hollow and a new ranger at Jordanelle. But yeah, we're always hiring rangers. Because we're expanding, and I know we may be looking into, as far as parks in a whole, adding more full-time employees.
Mm-hmm. How many rangers are normally stationed at each state park on a daily basis, I guess?
Well, weekdays might be one, weekends usually three. Mm-hmm. So it just kind of depends, because you want someone there in the morning and the evening to do quiet hours and things that keep campground in check.
Mm-hmm. Any bucket list items on those parks that you manage that you'd really like to get done with this funding?
Yeah, I'm really excited Rockport was selected as one of those to get that project done. It's needed just because we do fill up, especially like right now with low water. Our day use is still full. It's like paddleboard paradise. Tons of people are coming for that single vehicle parking. So that's one I'm really excited to get done.
Mm-hmm. And talking a little bit more about some of these summer uses, I believe Echo is closed to boats this year. Is that correct? Just because of the low water levels?
Well, it's not. Well, we ran out of ramp, and so it's kind of, we don't allow people to launch. They can launch off the beach at their own risk, and there's a few that will. But it's all dictated on the ramp, running out of ramp, which is why it's going to be so great to get that ramp improved. But when we start construction, we will be closing that area until construction is completed.
Mm-hmm. And how are water levels looking at those locations?
Yeah, so Rockport, we're at 32, and Echo, we're at 28 as of Saturday. Mm-hmm. So they're pretty low. The lowest I've seen Echo get down is 10%, and the lowest I've seen Rockport get down is 30%.
Oh, wow.
But that's in October. Mm. So it's...
We've got a ways to go.
It's a ways to go. It's a lot.
Mm-hmm. Is there any concern about, I think, kind of wildlife fish populations dying off when the water levels get that low? Will the Department of Wildlife have to restock any of these reservoirs next year?
I'm not sure as far as oxygen level. I know the it's warmer water. It's going to be less oxygen. It's going to be harder on fish for sure. We're not one of those reservoirs as of yet that have been increased their bag limit, which means they could take more fish. There's some... They double the bag limit, or they increase it because they were afraid of die-off. But we haven't gotten to that point yet.
Mm-hmm. Anything else you want to add, Eric, before we let you go?
No, I'm just excited to get Echo underway, and hopefully we'll have another record-breaking year next year.
Absolutely. Well, Eric, thank you so much for joining us. Eric Bradshaw is the director of the Rockport Echo and Rail to Rail State Parks with Utah State Parks. Eric, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you.
All right. We'll be right back with more local news right after this. Well, a gathering scheduled this Saturday outside the Marsac building will dedicate a memorial to Arlene Lobel, Park City's first professional manager who guided the town through the big changes and big challenges of the 1980s. Rick Bruff has more.
Lobel was the first woman city manager in Utah. She served in Park City from 1980 to the end of 1988. She died in June of 2019 in Portland, Oregon. Lobel's friends and associates from the old days of Park City are invited together on Saturday, July 24th at 4 p.m. at the south entrance of City Hall, the Marsat Building. One of the organizers, Sally Elliott, said a memorial garden has been created. She said you'll have to show up to find out why the memorial includes a plaque, three red benches, and two red steel shoes designed by local artist Zayfod Beetlebrotz. Elliott said that Lobel's daughter Rachel and her family will be on hand, along with Mayor Andy Bierman and current city manager Matt Dias. Elliott said that the attendees will share stories about Lobel, who, she said, laid the groundwork for modern Part City.
Arlene was the person who put us on a trajectory for success. She laid the foundations for the city that we are today and set an example of very high-quality professional management that exists to the day here.
Elliott moved here in the late 1980s and ultimately went on to be a Part City Council member, County Commissioner, and County Council member. But early on, when she became involved in the city, she found Lobel to be a mentor, an unorthodox leader, and a bit of a force of nature, as she put it.
I got 3 years to work with her and absolutely adore her. She was such an inspiration to me, and I came in never really having any experience in municipal affairs, but I was on the Park Rec Board. She was just such a guiding star and such a professional. I learned to adore her. I didn't get here in time to be one of her best friends, but I certainly did have the benefit of her wisdom.
The dedication will be followed by pizza and beer in city council chambers. For KPCW, I'm Rick Baroff.
Joining me now in the studio is the executive director of the Alf Engen Ski Museum, Connie Nelson. And on the phone is Larry Warren. He's an inductee of the 2020 Intermountain Ski Hall of Fame and former ski journalist and KPCW general manager, I believe, too. Good morning to you both.
Good morning, Sean.
Hi, Sean.
All right. So I understand that you'll be inducting both classes of 2020 and 2021 in August here at the Alf Engen Ski Museum. Connie, it must be nice to finally induct Larry and the rest of the inductees after COVID-19 threw a serious wrench in everyone's plans last year.
We're really excited to have both classes inducted, and Larry's been very patient, as well as the representatives of Randy Montgomery and Howard Peterson from 2020. Yeah, and Larry does all the work, too, behind the scenes. He does all the videos. He's going to MC. So it would be nice to actually thank him for all the work he's done for us, as well as his years and years as a ski innovator and reporter and in all things ski in Utah.
Mm-hmm. So, Larry, it sounds like you had a little bit of a break from all those responsibilities with no induction ceremony last year, but sounds like you'll be a busy man come end of August.
Well, we are editing the videos right now for the class of 2021. These videos play at the banquet, and then they play in the hall all year long on a loop. The Hall of Fame is actually in a hall, which I think is interesting, and in the hall, the videos play around the clock.
Mm-hmm. And Connie, how has visitation been at the Ski Museum since things have started opening back up a little bit? Are you guys seeing a good amount of people come and visit?
Yes, Sean. Last year we were closed for 10 weeks from March 15th to May 26th. And then we saw people trickling back in. And I have to tell you, June was our busiest June on record since we opened in 2002. between 1,200 and 1,600 people a day coming through the front door. So everybody's out. They're coming up to play at the park and also see the two museums, the Alf Engen Ski Museum and the 2002 Olympic Museum on the second floor. But yeah, they're here. They're coming actually and to our Hall of Fame, which is August 25th, the Intermountain Ski Hall of Fame at 6 p.m. We're already 3/4 of the way booked. So I'm excited to make sure everyone has a great induction and a good time. And I think it's because people want to get out. They want to relive. They want to celebrate. And we're excited to celebrate Larry along with his other class members, like I said earlier, Randy Montgomery and Howard Peterson. And the 2001 inductees, we're going to
2021,
announce.
Right?
2021. Oh, my goodness, yeah. I call last year a blur year.
I think we all do. So we're all allowed a couple of those.
Yeah, so for this year, many of you have heard of Bruce Tremper. And he's been the director of the Utah Avalanche Center for nearly 3 years. And he's all things avalanche safety forecasts, programs, and backcountry avalanche safety. So we're excited to induct him. He'll be coming with his family and friends. We're also inducting Leif Odmark, and he's known as Mr. Sun Valley. We actually, at the Intermountain Ski Hall of Fame, induct folks from Idaho, Utah, and Wyoming. So he's our Mr. Sun Valley, and his notable achievements include he's the founder of the Sun Valley Nordic Ski School and Touring Center, which many folks have visited. And we're also inducting Wes Diest. And he was a tireless supporter of skiing in the Idaho Falls area, 62-year tenure as a coach, and a two-year term president as Intermountain Division of the U.S. Ski and Snowboard Association. So the notables this year and last year, just incredible what everyone's achieved and the ski pioneers throughout the Intermountain West. We also have an award each year. We did not last year, but this year, we have a Crystal Award, and this goes to somebody who has supported and dedicated a lot of time to the Alphingan Ski Museum, and that's this year local Jim Gaddis. He's been a supporter of the museum and ski pioneers and ski history throughout our 10 years, open 21 years. Next year will be the 20th year. Mm-hmm. So, we're excited for folks to come and join us. The reception will be in the Alphingan Ski Museum. This time we're going to have dinner on the patio just for people's safety and, just to have some fun outside. That's why we're doing it in August. And it overlooks the pool at the Utah Olympic Park. Beautiful evening starting at 6 p.m. And then we'll go into the tent on the museum patio and have the induction ceremony of all six inductees. So we're really excited. And if you'd like to join us, go to inganmuseum.org/register and get your ticket, $100 per person. That's appetizers, drinks, and also dinner.
Sounds like a screaming deal.
Yeah.
And I wanted to ask you guys, we were talking yesterday in our news meeting about the new Olympic Museum in Colorado. Have either of you, Larry or Connie, have you either been there?
I have not.
I have not, no.
Our former chairman, Tom Kelly, has.
Tom's all about that stuff. Yes. I'm sure he has.
Yeah, I think I need to make a trip there. It just looks gorgeous.
Yes.
I'm on their website all the time. It's, beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Maybe some inspiration there for getting some of those, some of the similar exhibits at the Alphingan Museum?
Well, now that you bring that up, we actually are doing a major rehaul of the second half of our museum starting September 8th. That's another reason we wanted August 25th. And that's going to be so exciting. That'll open beginning of November. More information to come, but we're going to have a grand opening. We're going to celebrate. But, we're going to have 8 new exhibits, all interactive, state-of-the-art technology. More to come. It's going to be really exciting.
Sounds pretty cool.
And, Sean, the upstairs is the Olympic Museum from 2002 with a lot of the memorabilia upstairs from the Ingen Museum. So we have the start of a great Olympic Museum already.
Mm-hmm. And how long is construction expected to last on that?
It'll be September 8th through November 8th.
Mm-hmm.
And, thank you, Larry. The Eccles 2002 Olympic Museum on the second floor will be open during that time. And we're also looking, Sean, toward 2030 to 34. And so we're looking at what space we're going to use in that second floor for that, for looking toward the next Olympic bid and the next Olympics, of course, mm-hmm. and having space for that to tell the stories there. So, we're always looking ahead at the Alphingan Ski Museum, and we certainly appreciate the support of KPCW Radio and folks like Larry Warren through the years. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. And speaking of Utah looking to host another Olympics in either 2030 or 2034, Larry, as someone who has been in the news business for a very long time and was around during the 2002 games, what is your perspective on Utah and Park City wanting to play host to another Olympics? Do you support this decision? Is this a good thing for Utah? We hear a lot of chatter in the community about Park City is already on the map. We don't need more people to come. What is your take on that?
Well, I think Park City is so on the map that hosting Olympics again really isn't going to inspire a new round of growth. I could be wrong. I look at it as just an incredibly fun community building event that has a long run up, but the actual inconvenience, as some people would call it, or the actual fun, as most people would call it,
only last 10 days, 2 weeks, and it goes away again. So I just think the Olympics is such an inspiring event that, sure, I'd love to see it come around again in my lifetime.
Mm-hmm. And what about you, Connie?
Absolutely. I cheered when Salt Lake was picked as the U.S. Olympic bid city. So, yeah, it's a great party. I was involved in the 2002 Olympic at Utah Olympic Park as one of the event managers, and also leading up to the Olympics as the Utah Olympic Park director of business. So, yeah, I've been involved with the Olympics and love it. And I've worked at the Utah Olympic Park for 20 years. So I'm all for it. It's fun. Like Larry said, it's giving recognition and kudos to athletes who've trained hard. We have athletes training at the Utah Olympic Park in the bobsled, luge, skeleton, freestyle, Nordic combined, Nordic, and it would be great to see them shine here locally.
Mm-hmm. And I think one of the big counters to the, hey, we don't want these crowds argument, this is such a pain in the butt to host an Olympics, is that given that Salt Lake City hosted an Olympics 20 years ago and still uses a lot of those venues as training centers, we obviously have the UOP here, Park City, Deer Valley, we have Snow Basin, you have the Olympic Oval down in Salt Lake City, the arenas that you can hold hockey tournaments, that infrastructure won't have to be built again, or at least maybe some renovations. Do you think that's enough to kind of push public perception or public opinion in favor of an Olympics, an argument like that? Larry?
I do, absolutely. The Olympics, rightly so, have been criticized for the wretched excess of building opulent venues that are used for a couple of weeks and then they have no after use. But Utah is the shining example of, if you plan it right and you build in the right place, you will have after use, and an Olympic Park and Speed Skating Oval and Soldier Hollow are all as busy as they were during the Olympics. They're all successful venues that have managed to sustain themselves. So I think that argument that wretched excess is involved in building all that stuff absolutely does not apply in Utah.
Mm-hmm. And Connie, with your history at the UOP, UOP's expanding. I think they're still fundraising, I believe, to greatly expand the amount of skiing and snowboarding terrain there. A lot has been put into the UOP since the Olympics. It's almost, I don't want to say doubled in size, but significantly increased since the Olympics.
Yeah, and the Utah Olympic Legacy Foundation, headed up by Colin Hilton, has really gone steps and bounds looking toward the future, and has been supported by many groups and also the state government, because we are a boon to not only development for athletes but also tourism. We have close to 500,000 visitors a year. So the mountain expansion program will go on the back hill, looking toward having a GS course for it's all, the aim is to have training facilities for athletes. That's the mission, development and training facilities, which they've achieved. But at the same time, they lose money, so they bring in all these activities for the public. And the public love seeing the athletes training while they're, doing the zip ride, while they're doing the alpine slide, while they're doing a bobsled ride. So I think there's a really nice combo. And, yeah, looking to the future, always, that's one great thing about the Utah Olympic Park and also the Ski Museum. We go in tandem, always looking to the future, not staying stagnant. What's efficient, what'll work for the whole city, what'll work for the whole county and the whole state, and serve our athletes. So number one, let's get the athletes out.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of work being done behind the scenes by the Committee for the Games over the past few years, and still a lot of work to be done before that bid is eventually submitted. Have either of you been involved in that process?
Larry?
I've written articles about the bid process, and because of the bribery scandal, not just with the Salt Lake Games, but a lot of other games do some nefarious things. The U.S. or the International Olympic Committee totally reformed the bid process and took members largely out of the process to decide who wins the games. So that part has vastly improved, and now games are judged more on their merits by a technical committee instead of the old system, which was 98 members or so of the Olympic Committee, each voting themselves whether they cared about the games or not. A lot of these people are from, members of the IOC are from summer-only climates, and they really didn't have a whole lot of interest in the winter games, and that opened the way for them to be influenced in not the best of ways. So that has been eliminated.
Mm-hmm. We'll see how that process plays out over the next couple years. Anything else either of you want to add before we let you go this morning?
Come up to the Utah Olympic Park, see the Alfing and Ski Museum and the 2002 Olympic Museum. Sign up if you want to come to the Hall of Fame. That's August 25th at 6 p.m. ingenmuseum.org/register. Thanks so much, Sean.
Wonderful. That is Executive Director of the Alf Ingen Ski Museum, Connie Nelson, and Larry Warren, who is an inductee, 2020 class of 2020 inductee and longtime journalist here in Utah. Connie and Larry, thank you both so much for joining us this morning.
Yeah, thank you, Sean.
Thank you.
All right, take care. We'll be back with more right after this. Well, the Utah Department of Transportation and the Department of Public Safety issued a warning late last week alerting people to a cyber phishing scam. Carolyn Murray has this update urging Utahns to delete text message purportedly from state agencies requesting personal information.
The text message appears to come from the Utah Department of Transportation Driver License Validation. It asks recipients to respond to invalid or missing information on a Google form. The text asks for personal information, including name, social security number, date of birth, driver's license number, height, and weight. Utah Department of Public Safety spokesperson Joe Doherty said they noticed the scam last Thursday, and the Department of Technology Services contacted Google immediately.
And they sent a text message out that directed people to a Google form that asked them to fill out their personal information in an effort to, quote unquote, update their driver license information. So there are a few things wrong with that. The Department of Transportation has nothing to do with Utah driver licenses. That's a responsibility in my department, the Department of Public Safety. And people should know that the state government will never contact you through a text message asking you to update personal information in that form.
Doherty said state agencies would use the Postal Service to alert the public when information is required. The public should only provide personal details to regular customer service contacts. He doesn't think the text messages were active for too long.
It's important for people to realize that those text messages had already gone out, and we have no idea how many people actually received those. The link to that actually went to that Google form, the form was shut down by Google on Friday. So, and what we hope is that because we've been talking about cybersecurity so often, that most Utahns we expect will be aware that an unsolicited text message asking for your personal information is really something you should just avoid.
Doherty said if you've filled out the form already, it's essential to contact the FBI Internet Crime Complaint Center. A link is on kpcw.org. Additionally, you should monitor your credit to look for unexpected or new fraudulent accounts. Doherty said people could go to annualcreditreport.com to get a free credit report. For more information on cybercrime, go to kpcw.org. Carolyn Murray, KPCW News.
Well, the Historic Park City Alliance held their monthly board meeting yesterday. Joining me in the studio with a recap is Executive Director Ginger Wicks. Good morning, Ginger. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So you were announced as the new HPCA Executive Director in May and officially took over earlier this month. How have the first few weeks on the job been?
First few weeks have been going good. Of course, still getting up to speed and understanding all the various dynamics that happen in the historic district. But so far, so good.
Mm-hmm. And you also lead the Park City Area Lodging Association as well as the Park City Restaurant Association. And you'll continue to do all three, I believe, as you take on this Historic Park City Alliance role. Sounds like there's a lot of crossover.
there.
There is, yeah. So I will continue with those other two organizations, and there are a lot of similarities and crossovers in managing the board and the memberships, and I hope that to bring a lot of synergy between all three groups as well. So I think it'll be an added benefit for sure to be able to communicate what's happening in any of those arenas to all those various groups and members.
Mm-hmm. So let's move to yesterday's meeting. Lots of discussion about parking in Park City, particularly on the weekends. It sounds like some members feel some of the city's other parking options, some of the other lots available besides China Bridge, are a little underutilized. Could you summarize that for us?
Well, yeah. I mean, if you're up attending the Silly Market on Sundays, what we're seeing is China Bridge filling up around 10 a.m., which for a lot of folks can be very frustrating coming into town. However, the city's worked really hard to collaborate with the high school and also Deer Valley Resort coming online as an option, just trying to break habits of folks, you know, driving right to China Bridge and wanting to pay and park, and trying to get folks to go to those free locations and utilizing the amazing free transit system that we have here. So it's, you know, the city's working hard to try different things, again, to break people's habits. You will always have those folks that just won't read the signs and, you know, will drive up there and park. And so just trying, the organization is trying to work through those issues with the city and find the best solutions for everybody.
Mm-hmm. And speaking of incentivizing more people to use some of those alternate transportation options, city is experimenting with the idea of maybe raising the maximum daily rate at China Bridge to $40, I believe. And in a very close vote, your members said they were not in favor of that. How do you equate those two together? The majority of your members say they don't want it, but we do need to incentivize more people to perhaps not park at China Bridge.
Yeah, you know, unfortunately, I will say that we didn't have a great representation yesterday of members at our meeting, which was unfortunate when discussing such a hot topic, if you will. But yes, the city is exploring that, and if you go strictly off of yesterday's vote, while it was very close, the majority did vote that they did not want to see the rates increased. I will say, however, the city in the last council meeting is going to be implementing a lot of different things, cane security, additional police, adjusting signage, and so we'll continue to monitor how those affect the situation, and I guess if need be, we'll still consider raising rates. But at this point, if you went off of yesterday's meeting, the HPCA does not support raising the rates.
Mm-hmm. And I think we heard, excuse me, got to turn my mic on right there. we heard from Councillor Steve Joyce, who was on the council liaisons to mm-hmm. the HPCA, that the backup traffic on Deer Valley Drive is really affecting buses being able to get in and out of the Old Town Transit Center. Is that related to our parking? Is parking so packed here, cars are just lining up into the roundabout?
Correct. Mm-hmm. Yeah, again, you know, as folks are coming into town and wanting to get to Main Street, driving past all the signs directing them to the free options. So it does get backed up very quickly and very early in the day. So those are the challenges the city and city staff are facing from a safety perspective of pedestrians crossing streets and whatnot. So, and then also trying to eliminate the overflow from China Bridge into the surrounding areas. So it's not an easy solution.
Mm-hmm. So what will your feedback be to the council? I know your predecessor, Allison Kula, regularly gave comment at some of these meetings expressing the opinions of HPCA. What are you going to be telling the council about this?
The council did ask that we submit a formal letter outlining our support, so we will be doing that, and the letter will indicate that we don't support raising the rates, but also will provide a lot of feedback and comments that were provided in yesterday's meeting by the members outlining why we don't support it and the concerns that we have around it.
Complicated topic that I'm sure we'll have a lot more discussion at a lot of levels going forward. So let's move on to a little bit some of the other topics discussed. I understand the 15-minute COVID-19 parking spaces will still be on Main Street. Are they being reduced at all, or is it the same amount as before?
Yeah, so in an effort to support businesses, the city did implement a variety of 15-minute parking locations. Those will all stay in place on a permanent basis. We will be adjusting. There's currently three down by Atticus, in addition to the DLS zone. And in speaking with Atticus, we felt like one was really only needed down there. So that will be the only adjustment. But the one behind River Horse and then the other one up by Cool will stay in place, and the city will work to create some permanent signage around those.
Anderson, the Wasatch Brew Pub will be celebrating their 35th anniversary. There was some discussion over whether that'd be a public or private event. So what's the status of that?
So I can't answer that. There's conflicting conversations as to whether that would be public or private, but regardless, the HPCA will support Wasatch Brew Pub celebrating their anniversary, and they're obviously an icon on the street and have been around a long time, and we're happy to help them support their anniversary.
Mm-hmm. I understand the chalk art will be returning and some music as well.
Yep. So we're during Silly Markets, the upper part of Main Street does not see the traffic that lower part does, and trying to get people to migrate uphill. We're looking at activating some of the chalk art exhibits that we've been as part of Chalk of Town, and complementing that with some music and select locations. So we're working through all of the details around that. So hopefully, again, just trying to support members and get people uphill during those busy, you know, on those Sundays. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of people here. We just need to get them to blow uphill.
Yeah, that's the hard part, getting people to walk uphill.
Exactly.
So there was a bit of an incident a few weeks ago when the city accidentally erased some art on the street earlier. Yeah. So what is being done here, coordinating with the city to make sure something like that doesn't happen again?
Well, you know, that was just an unfortunate situation, and accidents happen. And I'm sure the city has addressed any communication fallouts that allowed that to happen, and we are bringing that artist back hopefully she'll be the first artist returning in our Sunday activation, so we'll be coordinating that with the city, and I'm sure the city has adjusted on their end. It was just you know, things happen.
Mm-hmm. We're all getting back to normal here.
Exactly.
So I understand with all the talk about parking, the meeting did run a little bit long and you did not get a chance to fully discuss the budget for next year. What can we expect with that?
Well, actually, the budget was approved in our previous meeting by the board. So we were just providing a current up-to-date financial review for the board to look at. And so we were not able to go into depth on that because of the time.
Mm-hmm. Any significant changes we should be aware of or no?
Nope. No.
All right. Well, Ginger,
Business as usual.
Good to hear.
Yeah.
Anything else you want to add before we let you go this morning?
No. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Well, Ginger, thank you so much for joining us. Park City Historic Alliance Executive Director Ginger Wicks. Thank you so much, and enjoy the rest of your day.
Thank you. You too.